So let's take a moment to engage a meditation practice, such as what we've been practicing already today, the posture of equanimity, where we really ground ourselves at our feet, bottom, hands in particular, with sitting, and we feel those sensations just as they are. We cultivate balance through the hands, the bottom, how we're sitting in our chair, cushion, bench. We feel into the torso and straighten it by rolling the shoulders up, back and down a few times. Last time, gently flattening shoulder blades to the back, cultivating a nice strong back, with a bit of uplift and softening at the front. So now we have a sense of poise, maybe some courage here or openness, along with the balance and groundedness. And we feel the head on the neck with the chin parallel to the floor, parallel to the ground, the eyes too, the eyes not downwards but more outwards, parallel to the earth, perhaps ever so slightly upwards, with a sense of a big view like a mountain, a tree, a wise elder who knows and hears and sees all things over time and space, with wisdom and compassion. And so breathing into this posture, giving yourself soothing touch at any point as you listen to these reflections on embarrassment and shame. And letting the posture also, along with the breathing, support you. So let's begin by knowing that self-compassion is uniquely helpful for dealing with shame, that it can indeed be an antidote to shame, as well as embarrassment. We could use this technical definition of shame as, quote, a complex combination of emotions, physiological responses, and imagery associated with the real or imagined rupture of a relational ties. So this is very much pointing to how complicated shame is and how shame and embarrassment occur in relationship with others. If at any point, even during the talking, it feels too much, allow yourself to open your eyes, stand, disengage, take care of yourself. So there are what are described as three paradoxes of shame. So despite shame being a universal experience for all humans, the word itself is considered taboo. We don't even like to say the word, yeah, or consider embarrassment in our lives. And yet shame, while it feels so blameworthy, has an innocence to it, because the innocence comes from the wish to belong, to be loved, to be a part of things that we would wish for any child to have. We're born with this wish to be loved, to belong, and it never goes away. So while it's blameworthy, it arises out of this innocence. It also feels very isolating, and yet paradoxically, it's universal emotion. And when shame or embarrassment arise, they feel so permanent, And yet, like all emotions, they are transitory, they're impermanent. And our practice today will engage these three paradoxes. There's a little poem by Hafiz, which you would have heard me read to you in Compassionate Living or Compassionate Living Grad, perhaps. So from Hafiz, admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course you do not shout this out loud, otherwise someone would call the cops. Still though, think about this great pull in us to connect. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye that is always saying, with that sweet moon language, what every other eye in this world is dying to hear? Love me. So we wake up every morning with this desire to be loved, to belong. And when we realize this, we can see that that same wish is in others. And bearing that in mind, we can feel a little less alone or afraid. Of course, shame or embarrassment is the belief that something is wrong with us that makes us unlovable, that we can't belong, that we're too flawed to be accepted into the tribe. And yet shame is universal and temporary. We are not alone when we feel shame or embarrassment. It's universal. It's important to remember that shame is a burden carried by only a part of ourselves for a limited period of time. It is never, ever a permanent characteristic of who we are. And so with mindfulness, we remember things are not permanent. With common humanity, we remember all experience shame and embarrassment. And with kindness, we nurture ourselves, such as with soften, soothe, allow. Now, it's important to know that for some, the sources of shame can be quite troubling and can make it very difficult to work with. So, childhood neglect, abuse, growing up in a critical household or culture, marginalized in the culture, being a minority of some kind, not being valued, and not even belonging to a minority group. And there can even be intergenerational forms of shame. So it's important to remember that the experience of shame comes from many places in our lives from an early age. And while it is not our fault, it is our responsibility as adults at this point to deal with it. We remember that shame is a social emotion. There's a quote here. It is one's own vicarious experience of the other's scorn, the self in the eyes of the other, that is the focus of awareness and shame. And we want to differentiate shame from guilt. So guilt is when we feel badly about something we did. And shame arises when we feel badly about something we are. As Brené Brown said, guilt says, I made a mistake. Shame says, I am a mistake. And we all make mistakes in our lives. There can be adaptive shame. And in adaptive shame, it's, I'm feeling badly about myself and I'm going to take steps to correct the situation. Notice that it's not a universal global statement about who I am. I feel badly about this and I don't want to do this again. Whereas maladaptive shame just says, I'm bad, I'm worthless, I'm unlovable. So it goes into those core beliefs that we talked about. It's also important to know that shame may underlie many other difficult emotions such as anger and fear, despair. It can be at the root of anxiety, depression, substance use, relational conflict. And so when our emotions become sticky, they're quite persistent, such as anger or grief, it may be that we haven't been able to address the shame. And so emotions and behaviors associated with shame are difficult to manage unless we directly address their root cause. Now, it's natural that when things go wrong in our lives, we start to feel bad. And we all experience these things. You know, we have some misfortune at school, at work, in relationship, with money, with health. And we can do this very strange thing to ourselves with this. We can go from, I don't like this feeling, I don't want this feeling, I shouldn't have this feeling. Something's wrong with me to have this feeling. I'm bad. And you fill in the blank. I'm defective. I'm unlovable. I'm a failure. I don't belong. So all those core beliefs start rising up in the midst of what is difficult. As if they can help, and yet they're second arrows of affliction, compounding the already difficult. And yet in those moments, the core beliefs feel patently true, as if they've always been there and always will be. And that's just not true. The beliefs and the emotions around them are impermanent. They come and go. So as I said before, core beliefs form the mental component of shame and embarrassment. And with around 15 at the most basic core beliefs for humans to possibly have, and there being 7+ billion people on the planet, we can remember and remind ourselves that whatever imperfection we believe is separating us from humanity may actually be shared with 500 million people. And this can be such a help to us to care for ourselves, to be with ourselves with kindness. And so remembering self-compassion is an antidote to shame. It becomes a healthy response to it. And here's a quote that I think is useful. Compassion addresses the experiencer, the person, the suffering person's sense of self. Therefore, when our sense of self is under attack, we need self-compassion. Kindness counters the self-judgment of shame. Common humanity counters the feelings of isolation in shame. And mindfulness counters the tendency to over-identify with our behavior, to over-identify with that core belief, to see it as permanent. And so self-compassion provides us with an internal mechanism that can restore our sense of self-worth through kindness, rather than depending on external social approval. And just a last few points, why we're bothering to do this. Shame, what sustains it? What keeps it going within us? Silence, inwardly and outwardly. We go about fearing that our unlovable qualities will be exposed, those negative core beliefs, and if anyone knew them, we'd be rejected. So we stay silent about them. And so with this practice, to admit to ourselves that we have these beliefs is a first step out of silence. And then we bring the compassion for the suffering. And then as we feel safe, we can share our suffering doubts with others, but only when we feel safe. And that would be with a therapist. Here we'll not be sharing any of the content of what we feel ashamed of or embarrassed about. It'll just be the processing that we'll be sharing. And with this practice of working with shame, we'll be opening to many aspects or parts of ourselves, the lovable and the not so lovable, the wounded and the compassionate, the old and the young, the male and the female, seeing ourselves as whole. So moving out of that sense of disconnect, of seeing ourselves as fatally flawed, and being absorbed in just one part and not seeing the whole of ourselves. Our self-compassion practice will help us to embrace all the parts of ourselves. And so feeling into body, feeling into breathing, taking that posture, letting all these words subside. Just this moment. And listening to the bells.